My name is Nada Ahmed, and I am your host for the Braving Innovation Podcast. I believe every company and team can bring new products and services to market and achieve immense success in creating sustainable and profitable business models. Through this podcast, I bring to you inspiring stories, tips, and strategies from leaders all around the world so that you can excel on your journey as an entrepreneur, innovation leader, and investor. Welcome to Braving Innovation.
Hi, everyone. So we are live here on LinkedIn, YouTube, and Facebook today. Today is a special episode in celebration of International Women's Day, which was this week. And therefore, it's timely that we speak on the topic of women in the workplace and diversity in general. And I am excited to have with me today, Amisha Patil, who is currently the head of public affairs and policy at Mainstream Renewables Power. And she's also on the shadow board of Renewables UK. And you have to explain to us what is a shadow board later. And she's just generally someone who's passionate about the low carbon economy, has been active in the space of renewable and clean technology, the energy industry, and is really a champion for women in the workplace. We connected not too long ago, actually, through a common friend and mentor to both of us, Hugh McNeil, if he's watching. Hello, and thank you for connecting us. And we just really connected on the topic of what it's like being a woman in a relatively masculine environment. And, you know, not only to say just male dominated, but just how in general women are supposed to show up is defined by how it's been for many decades. And we started talking around this idea of, is a workplace really designed for women or not? And we really got deep into some of our experiences and really connected with each other. And as we were having that conversation, I was thinking more women and people of minority backgrounds and just anyone in the workplace need to hear about this, so that not only we can raise awareness, but we can also let these women know that they're not alone and that these problems are real, these challenges are real. And the problem isn't really with us. It's more a general problem with the system that we need to address. So that's really what we wanted to bring forward today. And I thought, Amisha, if you could start with, since this is also called the Braving Innovation Podcast, talk to us a little bit about how you've had to show up being brave in your career in general.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me, Nada. And I'm really glad that we connected. And we connected over such commonality with a lot of the things that a lot of the challenges that we faced in our careers as well. So I'm really grateful to be here today. So thank you so much for having me. Well, first of all, I'm going to say that I've been working in the industry for around 17 years now. And I certainly didn't show up and wasn't brave from the very beginning. In fact, I would say that for me, a real change has sort of occurred. I've had a real shift in the last 5 or 6 years of my career. It's taken a lot of time to build the courage and to kind of take that step up to actually sort of initiate and bring about changes that are needed within an industry to make it more accessible and enticing to a diverse range of professionals, which is what the aspiration seems to be within the energy industry. And I think in many other industries as well, it's been incremental change. So, and that's a lot to do with sort of trial and error in the workplace, really recognizing what makes you feel uncomfortable to a certain extent as well. And then having the confidence to sort of test the water and sort of say, is this just me or are others sort of sensing the same experience as well? And really testing the water then. And then sort of also a lot of times in my career, I've always been coached to sort of say, well, don't take a problem to your manager or to your colleagues, take a solution. So then sort of recognizing that, thinking of a particular solution or a change that you'd like to see, and then sort of having the confidence to take that forward to initiate that change. So I think it's been, I would say, an incremental journey in that respect.
Yeah, and that's so true. And what you're saying about bringing only solutions, I think that's something I would also challenge a lot of managers on when they put that out there, because these days it's not about being able to find the solution, but really being able to identify the right problem to solve. And if you're not giving people the space to bring up issues, bring up challenges, then how are you going to go about solving these problems? And I wanted to kind of also go back to something that you said about, you know, it's not always been this way that you maybe have to, you're beginning to show up more with courage now than before early on in the career. And this is something that we discussed in our conversation, how coming from the backgrounds that we come from, you know, one being women, but also being women of color, there are certain expectations. There are certain ways that you're supposed to show up, a strong focus on having a good career and studying really hard and sort of following the certain path. And both of us kind of realizing that after 10, 15 years of working as we are sort of in our mid-career, that now we want to start carving out our own path instead of listening to all sort of that generic advice that has been given to us on what success looks like. So I thought maybe if you could speak to that.
I think certainly I'll talk about my experience from a very young age. I mean, I studied history at school. It was my favorite subject and it's what I really, really enjoyed doing. And that's what I really wanted to do at university as well. And taking that home to my parents when I was looking to pursue higher education was quite a challenge because there wasn't really much awareness as to what can you do with that? You're like, well, she's going to study history, but, you know, her cousins are doing medicine or accountancy or something which has a very tangible and clear career path. But, you know, what is she going to do? So there wasn't really that much awareness around that. So that was a real, real challenge for me. But I had a very supportive family, which was great. And my parents really championed me because they knew I really wanted to do it. But I carried a lot of guilt because they had to explain my choices to wider society, communities, extended family as well. So I kind of felt that I gave them a little bit of a burden.
But that's also an interesting point because, you know, we have also this campaign of getting more women in STEM. But often the background that you and I come from, South Asian background, there's not that bias, I guess, that exists. Actually, a lot of our parents would like us to go into math, into sciences, yes, into becoming a doctor and an engineer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is it. I think that there needs to be a bit more. It goes right down from the very beginning within our educational systems and institutions and sort of really making it clear as to what options there are, what career paths there are. And also not just higher education isn't the be all and end all as well. There, you know, it's not for everyone. There's a lot of value of learning on the job, apprenticeship schemes, internships, practical ways of learning and developing a career as well. And I think we're starting to see that in industries, not just the energy industry. I think we see that in tech, we see that in IT. There's, you know, we see it everywhere. We're in a digitalization era as well, and we're seeing a lot of innovation in that aspect. And with that, there's different ways, innovative ways of learning and developing skills as well. So where is the link between those systems and that sort of helping people navigate those paths from very early on? I think I definitely really lacked that. I think for me, where I've ended up has been pure chance, a lot of persistence on my part as well, but very, very challenging. And that's where a little bit of bravery came from as well, because I had to make this a success. I had to fight to get my career path and my education and what I wanted to do. So I kind of had a lot of additional pressure on my shoulders to show that I can make a success of this, and it wasn't going to be I told you so. So I kind of had to step up in that respect. But there are lots of cultural challenges there.
And you said kind of early on in your career, and you posted an article on LinkedIn on this, how you had a manager, and this was a woman manager, who said, you have to man up. What do you think she meant by that? And when did she say that to you?
It was sort of in the face of, there was lots of aspects around that. I mean, I'm quite a jovial character, quite chatty, which is actually quite useful when you're working in communications and PR and government relations and things that I do. But I think in the sort of, I had gone in from the sort of the public sector into the private sector, and it was sort of like, well, you're not coming across corporate enough. It's too fluffy. And you sort of need to man up and, you know, take criticism And I'm not talking constructive criticism, because that's different. I'm talking criticism. And she's like, well, you've got to man up and just take it. And I believed her for a long time. And I thought, I need to be a bit more serious. I can't, I've got to stay focused on my work. There's no sort of, people are not taking me seriously is how I interpreted that feedback. And I need to sort of come across, I need to man up. I need to take the criticism on its chin. I need to take any feedback, whether it makes me uncomfortable or not, and just kind of get my head down and get on with it, and really suppress who I am to be able to do it. Yeah. And that's how I felt. And I welcomed the advice at the time as well, but later on realized that actually, A, I wasn't very happy doing that. It's completely unsustainable. And that's not going to help me deliver my best in the role. And it probably wasn't the role or the environment for me.
Yeah. And something that you're pointing to there are these subtle messages that we get as being women, people of minority in the work environment, which is based on, 50, 100 years of mostly being dominated by men. And these subtle messages that we get that we have to show up a certain way for people to start seeing us more seriously. And it's kind of hard to pinpoint even what they are. I think for you, it was very explicit when someone said to you, man up. And for me, I remember maybe 5-6 years ago, when I kind of realized people still view me as someone who's young, just fresh out of college, who's inexperienced. And I felt like, you know what, I've already have more than 7-8 years of experience behind me. And I want people to start taking me more seriously and not treat me as this little girl who they have to kind of mentor and take care of.
I think showing emotion is also a way of communicating. And, that's whether you're really passionate about something or, if something sometimes can really anger you as well. Like, inaction can, we talk a lot about sort of climate change inaction in the field that I work in. And that can be a real trigger. It's very passionate. It can evoke a very emotional response at time, but it doesn't mean that that's an invalid response. So it's different ways of communicating. And I think sometimes emotion is seen as a real negativity. And I actually think that it can be a real strength, actually. Why is that seen as a weakness? It can actually be a very effective communication technique when you're trying to reach a diverse range of audiences. And I think just picking up on the other point that you've said as well, in terms of the whole sort of man up side of things, to me, that sounds like asking someone to conform to what is believed to be a certain or a right way. Isn't conforming killing off diversity, which is what we've been trying to aspire to for years now. It's not like a concept that's just emerged. It's been around for a very, very long time. So, yeah, there's a contradiction there.
Yeah, because that's such an interesting point, because I feel like people talk a lot about diversity, but they don't talk about conformity. So they are not kind of linking those two and realizing that, okay, if you actually want diversity, and want people to show up more authentically, we have to let go of these rules that we've set in our workplaces that is not allowing people to be authentic because they have to conform a certain way, because Okay. You have to exude some kind of executive presence to get to the next level. Even today, I have a friend, she was told by her boss that she does not have executive presence at the moment, and what does that mean? That you have to conform to a certain type of way, you have to show up in a very certain way, and that's defined by a few people. And a lot of women can conform to that or just find themselves naturally showing up in that way. And if you are one of those women, there's a path for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is another aspect as well. And I think one of the points that I picked up in my article earlier this week as well is constantly being told what success looks like, especially in the corporate world. It's climbing the ranks, the ladders or pay bands or whatever. Why can't we as individuals decide what success looks like to us? Because once you have the freedom to do that, that's where, again, you're going to have the ideas, you're going to have the innovation, because you're taking yet another box, another pressure away from someone, and you're letting them flourish in the best way that they possibly can, because they themselves have defined what success looks like. Otherwise, we're just in that that defined path that everyone's racing towards. And that's just another way of killing diversity, in my opinion.
Right.
Let people define what success looks like to them and support them to get there.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. And I think that goes not only to your employer or to your boss, but that's really for ourselves. And for me, you know, I call it my midlife awakening a few months ago when I decided, you know, I've been quite successful in corporate, things that worked for me. I could try to pursue and take that next step and climb the ladder. But I also realized there is a level of conformity that's required for me to succeed there, because all the women I saw who do make it, they have to adhere to a certain stereotype. So yeah. I was at this point where I had to decide, do I actually conform and be this way? Or maybe I take a step back and reevaluate success for me. And that's when I decided, okay, maybe it's time for me, it's the best time for me to step out of corporate and step up into something different and really try to find where can I really succeed through bringing out what makes me uniquely me.
I really like the way you've coined the term midlife awakening as well. Because ordinarily, this is another thing that we're conditioned to believe, that anytime you want to make some sort of a change in your life, which is seemingly radical, you're having some sort of a midlife crisis or identity crisis. And you're not. You're just taking control of your life and steering it in a different direction, professionally or not professionally, because your idea of success or happiness or fulfillment has changed over the years, which is perfectly acceptable.
And as we discussed last time, it's something that we reach kind of in our mid-30s, kind of that age where we get this awakening, where we realize, I'm actually a fully formed person now. I don't need to listen to everybody. I don't need validation from anybody. I don't need advice from anybody, really. I have more faith and confidence in myself. I have a track record. I've been able to prove things to myself. And something that someone said to me the other day really resonated when they said, you know, now you've reached a point where you need to stop building your CV and start building your career. So it's not about what I need to add on my CV to kind of show the world, to prove to the world that this is what I can do. It's more about what I want to do and build on that.
Wouldn't it be great if we could just start? That could be the starting point. Because I think we've both had similar journeys in that respect. Something that you picked up on the last time that we were speaking, you know, was this sort of midlife awakening. A lot of people say to me now, they're like, you're really confident, you're really outspoken. And I'm like, no, you know, I've been very open about my vulnerabilities and my challenges. Not only with mental health, but also with, you know, I write about imposter syndrome quite a lot. I guess where the shift is that I'm more comfortable talking about it and sharing my experience now and seeking help. But that came at quite a large price. I was silent for the first 10, 15 years of my career. I think for me, I get a lot of self-esteem from my work. I think a lot of people can relate to that. I'm not saying that whether that's right or wrong or anyway, but it's something that I've learned to accept about myself. My work is really important to me. Career fulfillment is really important to me. And I do get a lot of self-esteem from it. So I think what happened for me, particularly when I sort of hit my early 30s, was I need to take responsibility of ensuring that my workplace surroundings are healthy ones and somewhere where I can thrive or give myself the best chance. And that doesn't mean always sort of getting amazing appraisals or smashing my targets and really putting that sort of pressure on myself. It's about having an environment where I feel that I can give it my best and I've got the best chance of succeeding. So that awakening, if you like, came at a really big price. But at the same time, I think where we are today and having a conversation about that, I think there's many of us in the field that feel that we have a responsibility to share our experiences so that others coming in, and particularly the new talent that we want to attract into our respective industries, do start off in a better place than we did and don't necessarily have to go through that difficult trajectory that we had to at the beginning. I think that's a change that we're trying to bring about.
Absolutely. And that's so powerful. You described it so well, because it's not only people who are starting off, but it's also people who are still stuck in that.
Yes, absolutely.
Thinking that this is how it's supposed to be, that work is a struggle. And it's always going to be a struggle for me because the problem is really me. I'm not conforming because I see some of these other women, they're succeeding and they're doing just fine. But the problem is me. And that's really where I think the conversation about diversity comes in, that it's about valuing different types of people. And something that you said earlier around, you know, vulnerability, about people showing their emotions, how for the longest period of time, that's not been accepted at work. And now, thanks to Brené Brown, it's been popularized. Mm. And we're talking about people showing up being vulnerable at work. But a few months ago, as I was leaving my team and my company, I asked for them for just kind of some general feedback. And one of the feedback I got was from a man who said that I need to be less vulnerable, like not show my emotions so much. And it was funny because he was talking about a particular moment when I opened up to my team and really shared what I was going through and what I was feeling. And the feedback from most of my team was overwhelming. They said, you know, that was really the moment when we were like, another, we want to follow her. She has a vision and we want to help her and support her. And it was like a moment of leadership for them. But for some people still, it makes them very uncomfortable.
Yes.
So it's about making a space at work where people can show up with different emotions and it's okay, and not labeling it as someone who's being weak and not someone who can not control their emotions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then there's that, you know, categorization that we do, that it's okay for maybe some of the men at work to get angry or show frustration in a different way. And women might show them through tears. And then that's seen as a weakness, versus the anger is more strength, you know?
Yep.
So I think vulnerability is definitely something that we're still learning about what that means. And, you know, the way Brené Brown talks about it, it's not me showing up at work and crying. That's not really vulnerability. It's exposure. So it's exposing something that I am not really sure about how people are going to react to it. But I'm taking that risk because I believe it's important.
Absolutely. And this is, I think the more we come together and talk about these issues, the more we're finding that they're actually, they're not an exception to the norm. And so many, particularly, you know, we're talking about women in the workplace, by not sharing these experiences, you feel alone. For a long time, I felt that I was the only person going through what I was going through. The insecurities that I had, you know, we talk about the sort of the man up, but those situations, those and unconscious and conscious biases, I was just like, there's something lacking, you know, I'm just not good enough to be here. You know, how can I overcome this? But the more we talk about it now, we realize that actually these are issues that so many women in the workplace are facing. And that's the only way, by creating awareness, sharing each other's experiences and ideas around how we've overcome them or how we can bring about change, that we're going to actually bring about change. So I think the narrative is just going to have to keep on going. But we have a lot of work to do before we see significant change. I think this is the, I don't know how you feel about this, but I kind of see that, you know, there's lots of initiatives out there. There's lots of targets out there. Corporations are putting in, you know, I want 50% of a diverse workforce by this time. Okay, you meet that target, but is the actual workplace culture, are the practices, are the beliefs, are the way the organization runs changing with that as well? It's not enough just to have a target and to meet it.
Yeah, so the problem really isn't about the numbers of like how many women you have on the top. I think it really comes down to diversity. And that could be in the form of, it's more mental diversity, how people think, how people behave. And this is something that I think a lot of men struggle with too. And so when we talk about inclusion and diversity, it's not only just for women or people of minority backgrounds, but it's for men who are different, who don't fit that stereotype of what it takes to succeed or don't have that presence of a leader that what we have really made up.
Yeah. And it's also for organizations to really continuously reflect and take a look at what the recipe for success looks like, because that's how you're going to bring around the change in your people as well.
And as you mentioned, like I have seen a lot of companies who've now have 50-50 leaders at the top. But then as you cascade downwards, you know, nothing has changed in their culture. So there's no concrete, because that's really where the hard work is. It's easier to put a 50-50 number on the top or, you know, wherever, or women entering into the workforce. but it's really about making an effort to change the culture. And I think a lot of times that comes with how you reward people. Because if you're only going to reward a specific type of behavior, then everyone has to conform to that behavior. Otherwise, they don't have a path to leadership.
Or a specific type of credential. And I think this is another thing that you and I spoke about. And I always bring this up because maybe it's a bit of a pet peeve for me, or it has been an insecurity for a long time. I don't have an MBA. And I have had conversations where, you know, when I've explored different career opportunities or what have you, I have had feedback that, have you thought about doing an MBA? You know, and I'm like, where I'm in life, you know, it's not easy. I can't just drop things and go off and do an MBA. It's a massive, massive investment. But then I do look at sort of credentials and look at sort of hierarchies within organizations. And it does show that there might be a need for that level of education or certain backgrounds as well. So I think there's a little bit of a, in my opinion, there's a little bit of a bias there as well, if you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I feel like that bias is definitely there in the beginning or when you're trying to position yourself for a new role. But I have found, and this is something that I talk to many of the people that I mentor, is that the things that I've learned have mostly been practical on the job things. And yeah, very few things I take with me from the degree, but the degree helped me get my foot in the door and gives me that confidence, right? So sometimes, yeah, like that's what you're saying, you're lacking that confidence in just having that degree. So it's not really what you learn in the MBA itself, but perhaps, you know, people talk about the network that you gain, but also the confidence that you have going up there and saying, listen, now I have an MBA. But what if we live in a world where you could embody that confidence without having that degree, right? And sometimes it's more about working with yourself on building that confidence, because a lot of what you will be taught in the MBA can be found on YouTube today.
Or recruitment processes, which actually help identify certain skills that you would get from that level of academic underpinning. But you might have it elsewhere. You might have acquired that elsewhere. So I think for me, it's sort of like, well, why do I have to go away and get that certification to excel in my career? Why can't you give me a chance and have a look? I might have learnt those skills elsewhere, or there will be some gaps, but I have enough ambition, drive, and determination and commitment to want to have the opportunity to excel in my career, and I'll do a good job. You know, I don't know. It's just one of those. Yeah. I've heard it so many times, and I've heard on quite a lot of forums that it's just an example of a credential and another paper tick box way of measuring someone's competence. And it's sort of like, again, bringing in, going back to the diversity aspect of it, people will be on different journeys and will have picked up skills in very different ways of their life. So how are you going to factor that in when you're seeking people identify those skills in them?
Yeah, that's a very valid point. I was going to start looking at some of the questions that are coming in. I see Nick Maiden, he is very active here. And one of the things he's talking about is how anger and tears are wrong in any workplace. And I think this is an objection quite a few people have, that in both cases, the reason is what brought the anger and tears, neither should be happening. And I think that was the point that this person was also making, who gave me this feedback, is like, it should have never come to that point. But I still feel, and I, you know, I'd love to hear your view on this, Amisha, is that we cannot distinguish who we are, either at home or at work. We are people, we are humans, we're not machines. And we are a body which has a lot of emotions. And sometimes we might react to things, even if the other person didn't mean it a certain way. We should still be allowed to show our emotions.
I think what this is sort of, I think there can be boundaries in a workplace. So if that's what Nick is getting at, I think I completely agree with that. But those boundaries then have to be applied to absolutely everyone. I mean, I think that's how I would approach it. I think when it comes to the anger and tears, I think you're right. We are only human, and we are conditioned to believe certain ways of professionalism and acting professionally. But I think people should be able to set boundaries in a workplace. And I think that needs to be respected, and companies need to look at that and keep on looking at that, because that's going to change as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that completely answers the question, but that's how I would approach that.
I think that's a very good point about boundaries. I actually haven't been very good at setting boundaries with my boss and with others around me. And I feel like if I had learned those skills earlier on, it would have saved me a lot of hassle. So thank you for addressing that. So let's see here. When you're in a leadership role, you are not just leading people, but you're representing them too. My partner always tells me to make them proud. I think that that's a really important point, that when you're there as a leader, there's a certain responsibility that you have.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what a lot of our conversation sort of comes down to, that you're leading by example. So you're also responsible for initiating change that you need to see as well. And I think for me, again, I had the first opportunity to build a team when I entered sort of like my early 30s. I'd gone through quite a lot of the challenges that I had in my career that I just spoke about then. And that was almost like a real wake-up call, because I was like, well, I don't want their experiences to be the same. And I also want to kind of embrace new ideas as well and build something here that will set an example for the future. So I think that it's important there to sort of to challenge and also share experiences, but then I kind of lost where I was going with this. But basically, yeah, I think leading by example, but initiating change as well. And that's where the bravery comes into it. That's where I was going from it as well, because tolerating certain behaviors, your team's going to learn to tolerate certain behaviors as well. So I think there's a lot of responsibility mm-hmm. there. Sorry, mm-hmm. I went off on a tangent.
Yeah, no, there. I think that's a good point. And all I think comes down to psychological safety. So if your employees, if your team, if you're able to develop that kind of trust, and you know that you are able to show that you care about the team cares about each other, then when you do show up with certain emotions, and you know, like I tell my kid, he's allowed to be angry, but he's not allowed to hit, or he's not allowed to throw things, right? So that's when we can talk about boundaries, that you're allowed to have that emotion, and we can't control that. We can't control how people are going to react. But it's just setting those boundaries.
I learned a very valuable lesson from one of my team members who I think I wanted her to present. And I totally had forgotten that this individual would have had experience of presenting in an educational setting, which is very different to sort of going up on stage and presenting in front of 200 people. And I hadn't set up training for this individual either, because it was very soon after they had started and that was coming. And they kind of set me aside and said, you know, really, really, really welcome this opportunity. I think it's great. I know you're going to be there and you're going to help me prepare. But I just feel really anxious about this and I don't feel that I'm ready for this. I would welcome the opportunity once I've done the training, but I really can't do this right now. I really respected that. And it really made me, I should have checked. I just thought, this is a fantastic opportunity. They're going to love it. They're going to flourish. But I didn't stop to think that, hang on a minute, this person really might need that little bit of extra support. So that I really, really welcomed that feedback.
Yeah. And what you're pointing to there, I've experienced that too as a leader, because sometimes we project who we are onto other people. Because you were probably like, I would have loved that opportunity from my boss. And I've done the same thing when there's something that someone in my team would not mind doing, some kind of work that I would have found really tedious. And I'm reluctant to give it to them, saying that I'm not sure this is not the most exciting work to do. But they're like, they might love it. Happy to do this.
Well, that's it. And I think all those years ago, when my manager had told me to man up, it came from a good place. Honestly, that would have been the feedback that I'm sure, as a female engineer in that time as well, you know, she's very, very senior. That's what the feedback that she would have had as well. And she was very, very successful. So yeah, it is a lot to do with projection.
And I think that's the dilemma we are facing, in fact, because I've had bosses too who have very good intention when they're giving you that advice or when they're saying that to you. But at the same time, if they're going to put that advice as something that then, if you don't fix yourself, if you don't change according to what they've told you, then you're not going to get that bonus at the end of the year. That's where it becomes problematic, right? And, you know, I talk a lot about feedback. It's not really about fixing people. And you can give your advice. And as a manager, it's important to remember that's really from your perspective. So it really needs to be in that form of a dialogue especially when we're going for trying to create that space where creativity can thrive, you need that diversity. You need that that inclusive thinking. So I think we are the time is flying by. We've had some really good discussions, some really good input from the audience here. So I thought maybe we could leave the leave our audience with some positive words about the decade ahead of us. How far we women have come. We are seeing a lot more women entering into the workplace. There are also, particularly in Europe, lots of programs that are in place to make sure that we can create a more equitable society. What kind of advice can we give to women and people of minority, and even to men listening out there, on how to create a space where innovation can thrive because we are creating an environment that is inclusive?
Well, I think we exist in a world now where it's really accessible to connect with each other. It's like you and how you and I have connected as well. So I think that if you're curious about something, you have an idea, or you take an interest in someone's career path or whatever, initiate a conversation. The more we talk, the more we share, the more further we're going to go, and the more we're going to be able to evoke change. So I think connection, sharing, reflection, all of that is really, really important. Research, there's lots of support schemes out there now, particularly in terms of sort of not only diversity and inclusion, but also helping you diversify your skill set. Again, connecting with people from different organizations and industries if people want to make a change or take a leap in their career as well. So really invest time to actually research that change. Invest in yourself, really. Allow yourself the time to be able to do that. And I also say value in mentorship as well. That's something that I've always really valued, Nada. I can't express that enough. I think that if there's some form of self-investment in a professional setting, I would think that everyone should have a mentor. And it doesn't have to be the same person for a set period of time. You can have more than one. But I think it's having a sounding board and having a safe space and a trusted relationship outside the framework of your work setting, your day-to-day work setting, is very, very valuable.
I love that. You know, connecting with people, using your network, using spaces like LinkedIn, and through that also finding mentors. I am 100% with you on that. I have had so many mentors who have helped me along the way. They're the support that you need. You need to find those cheerleaders who you can go to when you're in your dumps, and then you can celebrate with when you're finally reaching your ambitions and your goals. And the third point you speak about is around self-awareness. So it's kind of investing in yourself and then realizing, I'm a strong believer of investing in your strengths. So what makes you uniquely you, focusing on that and making sure that you can shine through those strengths instead of focusing too much on the things that you need to improve on. So thank you so much for that. Actually, before we end, I'm going to take one more question from a LinkedIn user here who said, how would you best advise to meet ruling techniques from superiors, especially if you're battling imposter syndrome? This is for you, Amisha.
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
How would you best advise to meet ruling techniques from superiors? I guess maybe this person's referring to, you know, if there's a controlling kind of a behavior from a superior, from a boss, and you already experience imposter syndrome, how would you go about dealing with that kind of behavior? And I think the answer probably lies in boundaries, but I'll have you.
Absolutely. And it's not the most easiest thing to do, but but defining your boundaries to yourself is very, very important. So the fact that you recognize that some form of behavior is making you feel uncomfortable is the first step. A lot of the time, I like to give people the benefit of the doubt. People are not aware of the impact that their behavior is having on you. We can't assume that self-awareness is a given, because more often than not, it isn't for many of us. So I think it's really important to initially just have a conversation and sort of explain your boundaries. And if you don't feel comfortable doing that, have a conversation with someone that you do feel comfortable and see if they can support you in any way to sort of bring that issue to the forefront. I think it's really important. But please, whatever you do, don't shut up and put up. That is not sustainable.
Both you and I, we've done that. So we're telling you from experience, don't do that. It's not worth it. And if you can reach the state of enlightenment that we're in now, already early on in your career. Good for you.
Whoever's put that question forward, if you want to have a chat offline about that, just drop me a direct message on LinkedIn, and I'm quite happy to share some perspectives on that.
Thank you so much, Amisha. This has been such an amazing, inspiring talk. We've got some really good feedback from people live. If you want to reach out to Amisha, you have her information on LinkedIn. You can connect with me. We'd be happy to support you on your journey and answer any questions we're not able to answer today. Thank you and have a good day.
Thank you so much, Nada, for having me. And thank you to everyone that's tuned in as well.
Thank you for listening to the Braving Innovation Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, do hit subscribe so you do not miss any of our future episodes. Don't forget to leave us a review and share this podcast with others who might find it valuable. Thank you.